For the benefit of the visitors, you are certainly welcome to comment anytime you would like. I usually pick up a book of the Bible and go through it, and whatever comes up, that's what I deal with.
Yeah, we should systematically. This is more of a group discussion.
Yeah, interactive message. You are certainly welcome. And if you don't agree, that's fine. You can voice your disagreement. I'm not expecting to be a bunch of ameners, that's for sure. So, are you going to amen me on that one? So, today we're dealing with an issue that is probably not my favorite issue, but it's dealing with evil. Again, it's about a person who was demonically possessed. It's about an exorcism. It's a detailed one of Jesus. It happens to be come along the way. This is next in line, and so I have to deal with it, and that's the way it is. We're going to deal with the question of why is there evil, and look at some of the different views. So listen now to the story, Mark 5, 1 through however long it takes. Then they went across the lake to a region called Gerasenes, where Jesus got out of the boat, and a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet them. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with chains, for he had often been chained hand and foot, and he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Day and night, amongst the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs were feeding on a nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. And the herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legions of demons sitting there dressed in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people came and pleaded with Jesus to leave the region. And as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged him to go with him. But Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. We certainly ask God's blessing on the reading. Story. When a waitress in New York City restaurant brought him the soup du jour, the Englishman was a bit dismayed. "Good heavens," he says, "what is this?" "Why, it's bean soup," she replied. "I don't care what it has been," he sputtered. "What is it now?" That's my little joke of the day. I have asked some of my pastor friends, or one of them in particular, why there is so many demon possession stories and exorcism stories in the Bible, especially in the New Testament, and what Jesus had to deal with. No one seemed to have a really good answer, other than one of my closest pastor friends said that it shows that Jesus had power over even the demons. And he asked me what I thought. And I said I didn't really know, but maybe it means that through the process of Jesus kicking out all the demons, that we really had nothing to worry about so much about demon possession. We have been dealing with the issue of evil for many, many years, for as long as humanity can remember. Alexandra Solonitsky, a Soviet dissident and novelist, said this of evil: "If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the hearts of every human being." Somehow that statement is true, and Jesus illustrates this in the power of the wheat and the weeds. He says in the parable that, no, we are not supposed to pull out the weeds, because in doing so, we would destroy the wheat also. So it is definitely a problem in which we deal with. It is dangerous to assume that we are pure and good and they are not. That seems to be a tendency in which we think in today's terms. Them people over there are evil, but we're good. We tend to look at that. But I think that is an assumption in our own part, and that I think there is wheat and weeds in all of us. There has been many different viewpoints through the years, and it has been the problem of evil has been dealt with long before you and I have been sitting in these pews. And if your idea of what evil is and how you explain it does not fit into the parameters of what normal Christian thought, well, you're not alone. There's a lot of people who don't necessarily agree with the common Christian understanding of evil. There is all kinds of ideas, all kinds of questions, and they have changed over the years. The idea of understanding evil has developed over the years, but it basically started out with a story. One of the earliest stories was the Enuma Elish. It's an old, old story. I don't know if they really know how old it is. Probably before Abraham's time, back, who knows. And the idea is that how the world and the cosmos came into being. It's a story about the creation of gods and the creation of humanity and the final acts in its drama. And in this story, the chaos gods confronted and defeated and destroyed by often younger hero gods. In this case, Tiamat was killed by Marduk, her grandson, and in the story, her corpse is what formed the earth. One of the things that the story is trying to illustrate is that there is evil or struggle or tension baked right into the creation. Right from the very beginning, it's baked into it. It also illustrates in some ways that there was a world before this one. That's an idea that some in the Christian realm accept and some do not. I believe that life existed before the creation of this earth. I often said if heaven existed, it exists already, and it has existed. There's a heavenly realm and a hierarchy that existed. We are but a blip in time. There's another story, one of the first stories that attempted to try to understand the suffering of the world and why it occurs in our part. Our suffering is a part of our makeup and our human existence, and that is the Gilgamesh story. And that was these are very, very old stories that have been with us for a very, very long time. And I can't get into all every little detail along the way, because I don't have the time. I would encourage you to research it. These are very, very interesting stories, Dan.
Back to the first there, when they drove the evil out of one person and had went into the pigs. Does that mean evil don't disappear, goes into something else?
Well, that's a good idea. That's a thought. It doesn't go away. It just reformulates and comes out again. Look at the human race. Just because, you know, we take care of one problem, another problem comes up. That's a good thought in what the text is saying. I'll eventually get down to that a little bit more, a little bit. But I think even in the text itself has hope in the end. And that's where I want to end up at in the end of the message, that there is hope in this whole story. To suffer is to be human and to know that we're blessed. How else do we know that we're blessed unless we suffer? That seems to how humans learn. We don't know the good unless we know the bad for some reason. I've said that many times. We live in this duality in which we don't understand divinity or good. The good that we experience in this world is just the opposite of evil. That's how we know it. That's how we understand it. We know that, you know, a flood is not good because there's sunny days, or a fire is not good because, you know, it destroys. We know these things because they're the opposite of what they are. But in my idea, that is not divine good. In the world to come, there is a good or a divineness that has a goodness that does not have a duality to it. In the world of the tree of life that is in Genesis that talks about. There are other viewpoints on why we have evil in the world. One of them I want to look at now is for a second or two, a line or two, the Jewish idea. The Jewish idea looks at evil as a kind of a Cain and Abel story. That if you do good, God will bless you, and if you don't, sin will crouch at your door. So it's more of a personal view that of each person doing what is right and having a relationship with God. And they don't deal with evil. They do, but in a way I want to see it today is it's more of an individual idea of a personal relationship somewhat or as a group. That idea was lived quite well along the way about dealing with evil until Hitler came along. And then their viewpoint changed because, as I've read in various different texts, that as each one was going into the furnace or into the to be killed, they expected Yahweh their God to save them, and Yahweh their God never showed up. And well, I guess in the end, the United States came and ended the war. But after that, they had to relook at evil in a different way. They I'm not going to get into how they look at it. It's too long and lengthy. All these subjects that I'm talking, I'm just barely giving a sentence or two. I would encourage you again to look and to do the research yourself. Islam is very close to the biblical view of evil. Eastern religions somewhat do not have a devil like the Christians do. They're kind of vague. Their Veda writings are kind of more literary expressions, and you have a lot of room to maneuver around. The Vedas do have a evil god of some sort. But Buddhism basically doesn't deal with the God issues all that much. It's more of an inner journey, and so they don't deal with evil in the way that we as Christians or the Abrahamic religions do. Evil is seen as somewhat of a learning lesson or a learning experience, and that each experience has its place, and somewhat the individual who more of a karmic thing. If you did something bad happens to you, and so it all hinges together. Colleen and I years ago went to built a New Age study group over in Wysocks, a Gaia worship, nature worship. And there, the idea was was talked about that evil was, everything had its place and for its reason to happen. It was somewhat preordained, every action. But I spoke up and as I was listening to some of the people that were there, they talked about how one of their children got killed early in an accident, and various different things along the way. And I said, can you see that, can you look at that experience and have it say that it was supposed to happen? And once you start looking at it that way, that idea falls down. It kind of, how can you justify an accident and say it's God's will and it's preordained? even in the Christian idea, that's a very, very hard subject to swallow. So as I express that idea more and more, then the idea of everything happens because it's preordained or it's supposed to happen kind of fell down a little bit. And it does. Most explanations about evil do fall or have its problems. There's no question about it. Even the Christian perspective to some degree. The Genesis story starts out as being creation starts out as being the very passive deep. It's a deep that is kind of still and quiet, and God is seen as good. And only later does the rebellion or evil happen or the fall. The Christian viewpoint is at the end, there is this great epic battle between good and evil, and the devil loses and Christ reigns, and there's a new heaven and a new earth. But I think if you look at the words of Genesis, you can see that there's tension in happening. If you separate light from darkness, there is happens to be tension in between. There is tension built in there as you create. It's like a farmer who plows a field. Well, in order to grow a new crop, he plows under what's there and kills what's there to grow something new. It's kind of a destruction in order to have something new or better. So I see the creation story could easily be read as not necessarily as all just all being great and good, that there's tension in there. There's tension in the creation story, you know, dividing the light from darkness and what have you. There's things that are happening that are cause tension. And I do believe that tension is built right into our dimension, our realm. It's built right into it. Evil, you don't get away from it. I don't know where you're going to go to get away from it. Nothing works exactly how it's supposed to do perfectly all the time. Our minds don't, our bodies don't, technology don't. There's Murphy's Law and everything. So it's built right in. I think that we can assume to some degree that evil is something that we have to build right into it, baked right into creation. Even the Big Bang. You imagine the story, the scientists say it was a Big Bang. Well, that's a destruction. That's an explosion. There's violence built right into that story. There is hope, though, in this story. This week, I listened to a couple stories on NPR. One of them, we all know that what the Catholic Church is going through in our local areas. And there was a young priest being interviewed, and he seemed to want to blame the individuals, but not necessarily the theology of the Catholic Church. So it's a choice that these priests did these things. And he didn't want to really look at the Catholic Church as a whole and say, well, maybe we should change some things in order to make it better or to correct some of the problems. He says that those problems were taken care of by some interviews and paperwork that had to be done now. Well, as an interviewer, didn't quite agree with all that. So we have a tendency, again, to rationalize evil to the extent of where we blame something or someone or move it away from us and say it's that system's fault or that not the system's fault or the individual's. Purdue Pharmaceutical Company, the OxyContin, was another interview that I listened to this week. And the basic premise of their argument, the lawyers were, it wasn't the pills that caused the problem, it was the individuals who took too many of them. But when you dump millions of them in West Virginia and there's only a couple hundred thousand people or whatever, look what happens. They had a plan, and that's where it got them in trouble. So you don't blame the pill, you blame the individual. I find that to be a kind of a form of evil to some extent. We blame the person. The tree of knowledge of good and evil in the Bible, in which our dimension is adheres to, there's a duality, there's tension all the time, good and evil. One of the things I have said about evil in the past, and I will grant you the idea falls short by a mile. But nevertheless, I used it to justify or to give some kind of consolence to the individual who suffered. I said that some die so others can live. Some get sick so others don't. But even that idea falls really quite short. It really does not speak to the issue of evil. The effect of tragedy, how do you deal with that? My only thinking was that it maybe gives a little bit of solace that if somebody dies, a friend of yours may die, that he didn't die in vain. He may have given some type of sacrifice so others can live. I don't know what your ideas about evil are, but one has to agree that it is alive and well in the earth. It is part, every idea, analogy that I come up with, every idea that we have is like a new paved road. We accepted a new idea, it's like a new paved road. But eventually it gets rough. And we run back and forth it enough times, we run over that idea enough times, it needs repair and it needs to be rebuilt. We need to have change and growth and to develop. And the understanding of evil has developed in a lot of different ways. I don't know what's going to happen in the end of this realm, if there's going to be this epic battle in which Islam and Christianity has a Zionist point of view. There's a lot of people who are pushing us to the edge of some epic apocalyptic war, an apocalyptic end. I don't think that's really necessary. I think the world will go on for some time after. It may be destroyed and started over again. I think there's evidence of that happening. Civilization, yes.
Well, you said that there's like no stopping evil, right?
Yeah.
But can hope stop it? Can hope trump evil?
Hope can help you overcome evil, but it doesn't destroy the evil totally. It may.
So it doesn't trump it?
It trumps it in a sense. How do you mean by trumps it?
So it can short term mask it, evil, short term cure it, destroy it.
You can put an evil act that happened in your life and cover it up with the idea that there's hope of a better day coming.
Yeah.
It'll still be there.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned flood and fire, and it made me think when they are out of control, each of those can be very destructive. But if it's not your house or someone's house being flooded, at least soil is deposited along the banks and it's fertile. And of course, fire for many centuries kept us warm when nothing else really did. So sometimes there is an element of good and an element of evil in things.
Yeah.
And if you just get rid of the whole thing, you're losing some good too.
That's the parable of the wheat and weeds. This is built into everything that we have. You take a vehicle, it's very, very good. We travel from place to place, but when it kills somebody, is the vehicle evil? Do you blame the vehicle or do you blame the driver? Or, fire who keeps us warm now is out in California burning acres and acres of, and what's going to happen after that? The rains will come and it'll flood. I mean, there'll be mudslides and what have you. So how do you in one time you say it's good, but on the other hand it's destructive. That's the duality in which we live in. There's nowhere we can escape it. Yes.
So it's almost like God and the devil are both working at the same time.
To some degree. That's what's built into some of these old stories. The very very one, the Emma Elish. It was built right into that. There's evil built right into our creation. And the two compete back and forth all the time. It seems to be that, yes. But the biblical story is that Jesus will, in the end, overrule and become king some believe the king of this earth and universe. My idea is that this universe is going to continue on. It may continue on. Who knows how long? But I think as we die, we move over to the tree of life. That's another whole different dimension, a whole different realm in which Jesus came from, in which his heavenly beings exist. So I believe in a multi-universe. So the multiverse, and the Bible supports that. in Genesis. There's many trees. I see that as
probably in the hereafter you won't have to breathe because there isn't probably any air left to breathe.
Well, it'll certainly be something different for sure. My mind cannot fathom the idea of a world without duality. I don't have the ability to do that. I don't know about you, but I don't.
Well, in the story about the devil in the man, and it was cast out of the man into the pigs.
Yes.
Well, was it really fair to cast the evil spirit into the pigs and they all drowned?
Well, under Jewish law, they were unclean. So there, it was, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So.
Still doesn't quite seem fair to me.
Well, is life fair?
Probably man had the pigs, don't think it was fair.
But that's probably why they wanted Jesus out.
Yeah, for my pigs, I wouldn't think it was fair.
See, this is the problem of dealing with evil. It's just so complex and it's so hard to. One of the stories that I think one of the early writers, can't think of his name right now, Augustine dealt with, it was the idea that of a story of apples. Two kids went over across the fence and took the apples and destroyed them just for the sake of destroying them. But if they would have went over and stole the apples and made a pie and gave it back to them, is that evil? So if I simply go over and destroy them, that's evil. We understand that for the fun of it. But if I go across the fence and steal the apples and nobody's going to use and they're going to fall on the ground and rot and bring them back and bake a pie and sell that and give that, is that evil?
Or at least nowadays we'd say it was. Just the act of stealing.
Right, it's the act of stealing. But it was all actually it turned into something that was going to go to waste into something good. Yeah, Carol, Bob.
What are all these pigs doing in the story?
Now, that's a good question, Bob, and I wondered about that myself. So apparently there must have been some non-Jewish people that were tending had pigs.
What tribe or nationality is this that had pigs? Are we talking about good Jews getting rid of stuff, bad pigs?
And raises pigs and ate pigs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like your apples.
Yeah.
Which takes you into situational ethics that had its heyday in the 60s.
That what?
Situational ethics that had its heyday in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And a school of thought called values clarification to parse out what you were doing and make a choice as to how bad or how good.
So there's degrees of good is only as good as how many people it affects and how it affects them?
Yeah.
That's really short-sighted too.
To a certain degree.
Yeah, so it becomes, what is the greatest good for the most people? So policy in the United States should be, you know, what is the greatest good? But still, you're going to have people that are going to be affected negatively.
But that's basically always true. Human nature.
Yes.
I'm inclined to look at things as human nature being human nature, which has a duality.
Yes.
But it's colored by how far the pendulum goes in each direction. And if your goal is to do the most good for the most people the most often, then you're weighing on the side of good and limiting evil. Not getting rid of it, but certainly limiting.
So the greatest good, if you do the greatest good, that is good?
The greatest good for the most important ones.
For the most people. Okay.
As much as humanly possible.
But what happens if you're wrong?
Then you blow it.
How far do you...
Then you're back to somebody else's view of good, pushing on yours.
So you got to be constantly looking and changing and growing. Just because you made a decision that is the greatest good at the time, an hour from now, a week from now, a day from now, it could be adjusted again.
Yeah, this blows out absolutes.
Right, and that's the problem with evil, constantly pushing at your door, crouching at your door all the time.
And whether you leave an
absolutes. Morally absolute,
and
right.
This is good always, in all situations.
I think love is about the only thing I can say for certain that is absolutely good all the time. I don't know what other emotion or moral expression is right all the time. Even that sometimes, you know, do I love the murderer who murdered my family? That's very difficult. That's a very high level of love. But yet love is still, I think, ultimately in the end, what rules. That's what Paul says. Love wins in the end. Anyone else want to, before I make an end? Yes.
Oh, I like what you said there at the end. I mean, I think that can be valid.
What, love rules in the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's really the bottom line of what Jesus said. Love rules in the end. Love will win in the end. We may not see that here, but love rules in the end. And I do believe in universal salvation, or the possibility of universal salvation. And that leads me into what I'm going to say in conclusion, which gives us hope that even a person who is possessed by thousands and thousands of demons and spirits, that person Jesus can clean that person up. Surely that we're not possessed by thousands and thousands of demons, we can be cleaned up too. So it gives us hope that even the worst amongst us, Jesus cleaned up and made presentable to the world and showed mercy to. Surely God is going to show mercy on us, wouldn't you say? Wouldn't that give us hope to some degree?
Just like in the movie, the shot, the father had to come to terms with, you know, the guy that killed his little girl.
Yeah.
And really, when you learn to love, no matter under the circumstances, you win. Love wins.
Love wins.
Because you ended up still loving.
Yes. Anything short of love destroys the soul. I always thought that evil was a parasite on the good. Evil can't live by itself. It has to have a good to live on. So it's not necessarily an equal. It's parasitical. It lives off of the good. So Jesus essentially takes and cuts that rotten spot off and throws it away and heals that spot, and then we become one again. Or complete to some degree. Any other comments?
Jesus is laughing at us.
Everybody's entitled to amusement.
Yes.
I had an English professor one time who very wisely said, everyone is entitled to their own stupid opinion.
and that is somewhat true, and that's somewhat what I was trying to bring up about evil. We really basically have a bunch of stupid opinions about it, really. I mean, that's they all fall short, every one of them. Every argument that I've read, theological argument, all fall short, and along with a lot of them. So what does Jesus have to do with us? I will say one word: everything. Amen.
Son. This is a son. He has a mother. He is a child. He'd be a brother. Is this a heart? This is a soul in need of love to see beyond the awful things that life has done. This is a son. Mother Mary stands beneath the cross, staring up in utter disbelief. And as the angry crowd screams out in hate, he whispers through his tears and through her grief. This is a son. He has a mother. He is my child, he is your brother, he has a heart, he has a soul in need of love to see beyond the awful things that you have done. This is a son, he has a mother, he is a child, he is your brother.
Saving of the